player, coach, pain in the ass. He's done it all on the gridiron, from South Bend to Arrowhead, from football on the radio, back to football, then more radio, then a little more football, and now radio again. It's Tim Grunhard on the program. Tim Grunhard is presented by CBD American Shaman. Do you know what the benefits of CBD are? Stop in at one of the 40-plus CBD American Shaman locations and see how CBD can bring balance to your body and mind. CBDAmericanShaman.com.
That's right, Tim Grunhard, football insider, life coach, and of course, Chiefs Hall of Fame center with us here in the program. Tim, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing excellent, Saran, as we welcome the damn Cincinnati Bengals back into Kansas City this weekend. First of all, season flew by, and here we are in the AFC Championship for the fifth year in a row, which is just unbelievable, but having to slay that proverbial dragon that keeps on burning us as we play them throughout the last couple of years. So it'll be an exciting and interesting game for the Kansas City Chiefs as they try to go to the Super Bowl again.
Yeah, what do you think? What kind of a mental hurdle is it to play a team that's beaten you three straight times? I mean, how much are the Bengals owning a little portion of the Chiefs' mind?
Yeah, great question. And, I can go with the old adage that, it's not going to bother the Chiefs. You know, they're going to be hungry. They're going to be angry. They're going to be motivated. But telling you as an ex-player and a guy that's been in this situation before, when teams have your number, there are a couple things happen. Number one is, you over-prepare. I think a lot of times you try to do too much. And when you try to do too much and you over-prepare, then you play a little bit tight. And when you play a little bit tight, the next thing you know, you're making mistakes. And when you make mistakes against a team like the Bengals, they're going to beat you. And then the other thing is kind of the old deal where, you get out there on the field and things are going well. And then all of a sudden, Mixon runs for 30 yards for a touchdown, or you miss a tackle on P. Ryan out of the backfield and a catch, or Chase beats you, or Boyd beats you, and a deeper Higgins beats you. And then you're like, oh, here we go again. So mentally, the Chiefs are going to have to come out, and they're just going to have to start with their hair on fire against this team. Now, they've done that before and lost. So I don't know, man. This is an interesting game mentally more than physically for the Kansas City Chiefs. I agree with you wholeheartedly. This is a challenge now. And the interesting thing is, I think the roles have switched a little bit, Saran, where the Chiefs kind of – I don't want to say cocky, but had a lot of confidence playing against other teams, especially the Bengals, and when the streak started, right? And I think it switched. So the Bengals, I think, are coming in with the idea that, hey, we've done this before. We beat these guys. We have their number. So maybe they could be that team that maybe just underestimating the talent of the Chiefs instead of the other way around. So we'll see how that works out. There's a lot of different twists and turns mentally that are going to happen in this game.
Yeah, there's no doubt. What is, like, do the Chiefs players look at this and say, look, we've been right there in all three games. We should have won all three games. So they're actually confident, or the fact that the Bengals keep finding a way to win, even after the Chiefs have had nice leads, does that tell them we just can't beat these guys? And so there's this mental hurdle that has to be gotten over. Which is it? The confidence that they should have won, so they barrel into it, or do they go into the game like waiting for the other shoe to drop?
Well, I think you're telling yourself all week, and you're telling everybody that asks you that, hey, listen, we have confidence. We're going to go into this game, and, listen, we're a better football team, and we're at home and all those good things. But once again, just to be really honest with you, as a guy that sat in that locker room and got himself prepared for games like this and played against opponents that have beat you pretty consistently, it creeps into your mind that, hey, what do we have to do to win? So, we're going to have to play our perfect game. And a lot of times when you try to play a perfect game is when you, play tight. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think, as they prepare and as they're kind of talking with each other and talking to their family and talking to the fans and the media, that everything's kosher, everything's great, we're ready to roll. But I think when they look in the mirror and behind those blue and brown and green eyes, that they're probably, thinking, hey, this team, they just have our number. And, we're going to have to hope for some good things to happen. So, Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think there's one easy answer for this. Is, you know, especially when you're playing against a team that, you know, I mean, the Chiefs have been a dominant football team in the AFC West. They've been a dominant football team in the AFC as a whole, and even the NFC, but not against the Bengals. So why is that? I mean, there's some things that we could talk about, but mentally, that's a hurdle they have to overcome, Saran, as they go into this AFC championship.
Yeah, and I don't think you want it to go any further than now, right? Like, we've talked about what's at stake for these teams. Like, one, Zach Taylor goes right by Andy Reid, at least on the, you know, pecking order of coaches in the game today. Joe Burrow, if he would go on and win the championship, he'd be all caught up with Patrick Mahomes, two Super Bowl appearances, one win. I mean, just for, like, if you're going to be the beast of the NFL, if you're going to be at least the king of the AFC, you got to win this game. Otherwise, the Bengals have stuck a flag in the ground and said, we're the team. And they're a good challenge. You know, we've talked about it. The Bills don't have a lot of, you know, picks and cap room next year. The Bengals do. The Bengals are in a situation where they can maneuver a little bit, just like they're about the same spot the Chiefs are overall as far as what kind of ammunition they've got to get better next year. So here you are. You might as well get it done. I know we're gonna talk about Mahomes' ankle, but, I mean, you're right here. Find a way to get it done. And I really do think, Tim, as you watched it, I think the Super Bowl is played in Arrowhead on Sunday. I think whoever wins that game will beat even the Eagles, will win the Super Bowl. I think the AFC Championship game is truly the Super Bowl. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. And I also agree with you. I think the Chiefs right now are standing on the top of Mount Everest and they have their flag up there. But, you know, the Bengals are coming up to knock them off. They're playing King of the Mountain, and this is the game that one team's going to get shoved off the mountain and going to be looking up with the Bills and the Chargers and the Titans and the Ravens. They're going to be down there looking up at the team in the AFC. And to me, whoever wins this game has that title. And I agree with you. I think Coach Taylor moves up as an elite coach. I think he's a great coach, but he turns into an elite coach, two Super Bowls in a row. And then, like you said, I think whoever wins this has a really good opportunity to win the Super Bowl. And then Joe Burrow, a guy that, you know, hey, listen, I know a lot of people don't like him because he's cocky. And some of the things he says kind of just irks me a little bit. But those are the kind of guys you want in the huddle. I hate to tell Kansas City that, but those are the kind of guys, just, you know, you look at a – and once again, I'm with you on this one. I never like comparing football to war or anything like that because I love what you say. Nobody's ever running on the battlefield saying, let's go get this like a football game. They're not saying that, right? And I think that's one of your better lines that you've had over the years. But yeah, I do think you could compare a quarterback to a general where that general, if he has the ultimate confidence in what he's doing, his troops are going to follow him. If they got the ultimate plan and they trust in the plan and they trust in the guy and they trust in the system – you know, guys will go out there and they'll lay their proverbial lives on the line. And when it comes to war, but when it comes to football, they'll lay their trust in a quarterback that has that cockiness. And I loved his answer when he said, you know, how long is this window the Bengals have? And he says, as long as I'm a Bengal, the window's open. As long as I'm playing, the window's open. But, you know, I think the Chiefs have to find a way to knock the cockiness off. And we'll talk a little bit about, I think, some of the things that the Chiefs could do to do that. I think they got to change up a couple little things.
Right.
But to your answer, I mean, there's so much to talk about in this game, man. I'm so excited. So just tell me to shut up if you want.
Well, but I think your point, I love what you said about Burrow, because that's what I felt like is like the guy that everyone who plays him loves to hate. But if he's your teammate, you can't wait to go to battle with him. To, again, use the war analogy that he really likes. But I think, you know, that's something you need to understand, that this team, he's not a flake for them. He's the guy. But it's not just what he says, right, Tim? It's the way he stands in against the rush. It's the toughness he shows. It's the hits he takes to deliver the football. And it's the fact that he delivers the ball, right? He puts his team in a position, I assume he makes all the checkdowns, all the calls. You know, what you want, you know, I remember Brian Waters telling me this, that What you want out of a coach is somebody that's going to make you better, right? If he will make you better, put you in position to succeed, and overall put the team in position to succeed, you love playing for that coach and you'll do whatever you can for him. Quarterback's kind of like that as well, in the sense that, you know, he's got to make the right checkdowns, he's got calls he's got to make, but then he's also got to deliver the football and deliver it to where they can make plays, not get his guys hurt. Patrick Mahomes always talking about, I got to put the ball in a place where I'm not leading him into a hit like that. Like, you got to take overall ownership of the team and take care of the team And for all the cockiness and everything he says, he does that as a quarterback. And I think it's clear that that team raises its game around him.
Yeah, you know, something I think most of us missed, I didn't, but Joe Burrow, I think it was the middle of the first quarter, or maybe the middle of the second quarter. It was in the first half. There was a play that I believe he was going to throw the ball to one of his receivers, and they weren't on the same page. And he threw the ball, and he was telling him to kind of, you know, hit a better angle because he was thrown to the window that he expected the guy to be in. And he gave that guy a look that I haven't seen in a quarterback in a while, which I didn't know that he had that in him. You know, he's always a doo-doo-doo guy that seems like he's happy and Joe Cool and everything else. But the thing that I appreciated, he was really upset. All right. I think it might have been a second and long situation. Or I can't remember what it was, but he stepped out of the huddle and kind of walked towards the bench and kind of composed himself because he wanted just to lose it at that point. He was going to just let that receiver have it. And he walked back in. Oh, you know what? It wasn't a receiver. It was an offensive lineman. They gave up a sack. One of the Buffalo Bills ran completely free coming off the left side and hit him right before he's going to throw a key third down pass. That's what it was. I apologize. So I just remember. So he looked at the offensive line like, dude, what, you got to push the protection out there. What are you guys doing? And he was upset and he walked away and kind of composed himself and said, you know, whatever I say now is not going to be good.
Right.
And then he came back to the huddle and he said, guys, you can read his lips, hey, we got to do better. We got to get over and pick up that. And I thought that was pretty cool of him to do that. But so if I can, so last week the Chiefs did bring a little bit of pressure on Lawrence. They 22% of the time they blitz. They hit the quarterback seven times, had a couple sacks, you know, and one turnover. I thought the Chiefs did a really good job last week of rallying to the football. And Andy even said that, listen, they're flying around. They're doing all kinds of, you know, good things, being aggressive, which I thought they were. But the last time they played against Burrow, a couple things happened. Number one is they only sacked him one time. Right. And the Chiefs were dialing up some blitzes now, and they only got to them one time. And this whole adage of these offensive linemen that, you know, were young guys and they weren't prepared and they were going to get beat. Well, as soon as it started snowing and raining, that was all out the window, by the way. And I tweeted it out. I said, when those offensive linemen woke up in the morning, the Cincinnati Bengals at the hotel and looked out the window and saw snow, they were the answer to their prayers, because it's so hard for a defensive lineman to rush and get footing to get after the quarterback when it's bad weather. So offensive linemen love snow. They love rain. They love that kind of stuff because it slows them down. But the couple things that the Chiefs did is against Burrow in the second half of the game, and then really throughout, you know, I was watching this year, too, week 13, is Joe Burrow really hurt him with his legs. Mm-hmm. He had like 46 yards rushing on 11 carries. And so the Chiefs have got to find a way, number one, when they get to him, they got to tackle him. Then the second half of when I was watching the all 22 of the playoff game, they got to him and they didn't tackle him. Number two is they got to have a spy. You got to put somebody in a position that they're watching Joe Burrow. And I get it. You're taking somebody out of coverage and, you know, all that. But he hurt him a couple times in some really key situations. And number three, the old adage of, hey, let's blitz in certain situations is whether it's third down and long, or whether it's in the red zone, or whether it's, you know, on certain downs and distances. I think you completely go away from that. Watching the film, everybody out there, watching the all 22, there are certain formations, and listen, I didn't watch it enough, and I am not educated enough in what they do with their tendency-wise, but Spags has got to find, and this is really important, I want you guys to watch this, and I think this is where Spags is going to go this week. There are certain formations that they do certain things that leave themselves wide open to pressure the quarterback. And they have got to dial up blitzes and pressure off formation this week. And not off a down and distance, not off a situation, not off a field position, off of formations. So if they come out in a certain formation, the Chiefs have got to make that adjustment. And if they're going to blitz, that's when they got to blitz. It doesn't work against Burrow to blitz him on third down in a long situation because he gets the ball out really quick. It doesn't hurt Burrow when you blitz in the red zone because of the timing that he throws the ball out. But in certain formations, there are certain things he can't do. He can't get the ball out as quickly as he'd like. And I think the Chiefs have got to find out what those formations are, Saran, and dial up blitzes on the field with their guys that way. And not, and this is one of the things, okay, if they come out in trips formation, and I'm not saying that, this is a, or they come out in doubles, or they come out in a two tight end situation, and there are certain things that they do protection-wise to those blitzes that they can't do regularly, then you got to find those little things and you got to attack those little things. You cannot just say, we're going to blitz on third down or we're going to blitz in the red zone because they get hurt. You watch them. They're either running little outs or little ins with their wide receivers, especially in the slot. And every time you bring a blitz, you got a one-on-one situation. And all they're looking at is leverage. If he's outside, they're going to cut inside. If he's inside, they're going to cut outside. And Burrow sees that, and he completes it all the time. You got to disguise, and you got to blitz on formation.
I want to go back to what you said about the weather. I mean, because we may have a sloppy track in Kansas City. In reality, the Chiefs want a good field, right? Like, that's what they want. So they can have, and I felt like it, and they kind of hinted at it on the broadcast, but those three backup offensive linemen for the Bengals were really helped by the fact that the Bills couldn't get their footing. Chris Jones wants good footing to be able to get after the quarterback. And they've done that. They did it in the AFC Championship game. They just didn't get him in the most key situations. You know, you got to hope that the forecast that I saw, you know, earlier where it was, hey, it's going to be sloppy early, but then get better late and cold late, that's fine. They'll have the field covered because you want good footing so that the Chiefs defensive line can expose the offensive line.
Absolutely. You absolutely do. And, you know, Chris Jones, man, this is becoming just a weird coincidence that he can't get a sack in the playoffs. I mean, I kept waiting and watching, and I don't know about you, but I was keen in on him most of the time to watch. And it just looks like, Saran, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but he looks tight when he's in the playoffs. It looks like he's pressing. And once again, that is a microcosm of what the Chiefs can't do against the Bengals. When you think too much and when you put too much pressure on yourself, and I contend that Chris Jones has a little bit of a feel or an attitude that the whole team really needs to shed going into this game. I think he presses and tries too hard in the playoffs to get to the quarterback. And when you press and you try too hard, you don't do it. It's just as simple as that. And the Chiefs have got to find a way to let it, hey, Chris, play free. Don't worry about the sacks. The sacks will come, you know, find that little thing that offensive lineman does poorly and attack that, and good things will happen. Don't try to do too much. Don't try to put pressure on yourself to get to the quarterback, because when you do that, you play tight. And, you know, and that's, I think, a perfect example. I look for about three things in this game that I'm going to look for on the defensive side. Number one is, can they pressure, you know, Joe Burrow with just 4 or 3? And if they can, then they should do it and just flood the zone in the middle and, you know, cause some traffic issues, some of the patterns going across the field and some of the stuff and take care of business. Number two, you got to get a turnover somehow. You know, the big change up, and once again, watching that all 22 of the second half, the big change was a defensive lineman getting an interception on Patrick Mahomes, right? It was like the middle of the third quarter or towards the end of the third quarter, and they were throwing a screen, and I forget who it was. It might have been Hubbard who picked the ball off and just changed the whole dynamic of the game. So they got to find a way to get. But Chris Jones, if he can get to the quarterback early and just play free, I think that'll open up a lot of different things for the Chiefs defensively.
Yeah, no doubt. We're talking to Tim Grunhard here in the program. Let's take a break. We come back, we'll dig in more to what happened in the game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll talk a lot about the injury to Patrick Mahomes, what it means to try to play through a high ankle sprain. More with Tim Grunhard coming up next here in the program.
Jazz, end of the hour answer. What two teams played in the first Super Bowl broadcast by John Madden? It was the 49ers and Bengals, Super Bowl 16, January 24th, 1982.
Ah, very good, Curtis. I like it. Niners-Bengals. Timmy, were you Niners-Bengals? Is that the one, the old Ken Anderson, Joe Montana? Did you get that one, or did you think it was a different one?
No, I thought it was going to be the game in New Orleans between Oakland and Philadelphia. I thought that was...
Plunkett and Jaworski, Kenny King with the big touchdown catch. Yes, I recall that one.
That's when Joe Montana became the GOAT in that game. That comeback, the John Candy game, right?
No. This was the first one when it was Ken Anderson. This is his first
Super Bowl. Oh, okay.
When they kind of surprised everybody and went 13-3 and really kind of established themselves as a real. This is the Super Bowl after the catch.
So this is they only played the Bengals once, or they play them twice in the Super Bowl?
They played them twice.
I didn't know that. That completely slipped out of my mind.
Yeah, they played them in Detroit. That was the first of their championships, and then the fourth of them, the last one with Joe Montana, was the one against the Bengals. Okay. Or maybe that was the third one. I'm trying to remember the order of who they beat.
I think the last one they beat was in Denver in like 92 or 91.
Yeah, you're right. So that would have been the third one. The one you're thinking of was the third one. Yeah. The Broncos were the fourth one, and then the Steve Young Niners. Was the Steve Young Niners that blasted the Broncos? No, it was Montana, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Steve Young Niners beat the Chargers.
Yeah, it was Montana. I'll never forget I got drafted by the Chiefs in 1990 and got a call the day of the draft to go to the 49ers. And then the first round, they picked Dexter Carter, and they called, "Hey, we're going to take you in the second round." I was like, "All right, cool." And then all of a sudden the Chiefs called. And I was like, I remember thinking, "Oh, I would have been in that Super Bowl." So that's the way it wasn't because I'm that smart. I am trivia illiterate. But I remember that one. So
very good. Very good. We're talking to Tim Grunhard here in the program. Of course, we were playing for great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen. You can get it two locations out at the Legends and, of course, down by the University of Kansas Health System at 39th and State Line. The best Cajun food anywhere around. I'll get you some shrimp etouffee, some catfish bites, always a great appetizer. It is a wonderful, wonderful Cajun menu, all of it made from scratch. And, of course, wonderful live music, whether it's getting together with the guys, taking the whole family out, or a date night. You cannot go wrong with wonderful live music and the best Cajun food anywhere in town. It's at Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen. We're talking to Tim Grunhard, brought to you by our friends at CBD American Shaman. Tim, playing with that ankle injury. Their videos, big hubbub today about the videos of Patrick Mahomes working out with his trainer, and that, you know, he's doing fine and all those kind of things. What's he feeling like right now, and what's it going to be like to play that you've had a similar injury?
Yeah. So, I mean, they're all a little bit different. High ankle sprains are the worst. All right, let's just start with that. They're the worst by far. You know, you can have a low ankle sprain and play with it. High ankle sprains, they don't cooperate very well. I thought it was interesting. Tony Pollard had a very similar injury as Patrick Mahomes, but maybe just a certain spot or just, I'm not going to say Tony Pollard isn't as tough as Patrick Mahomes, but, you know, Tony Pollard was gone from the game.
Well, do you agree? Joe Valerio said this morning on the Border Patrol that the only position you can play with that injury is quarterback. It's the only one you can get away with because there's too much stop start, you know, all that kind of stuff that's going to go with it. That this, if he played any other position, he'd be out.
Yeah, I would never argue with Joe Valerio. He's a lot smarter than I am. So. But let's kind of, I love to give examples of things that happened to me so you guys can, you know, kind of an idea of what's going on behind the scenes. So we were playing out in University of Washington. That's right. The University of Washington against the Seattle Seahawks as they were knocking down the Kingdom and building the other stadium. I believe it was in either 99 or 2000. No, it was 2000. And I was up on the second level blocking a linebacker, and somebody fell on the side of my leg and popped the ankle. And I tried to play through the next play, and it was just too painful. I think it was third down anyways. I came out. They said, "Hey, we're going to bring you in for an x-ray." did the same thing Patrick did. You know, for everybody out there, every stadium has x-ray machines and has x-ray techs. You go in there, it's just like going into, you know, your care now center, and you know, you have your x-ray and all that. So
put on your lead underwear and
yeah,
you know, you're ready for the x-ray.
Right. Yeah, they throw the lead underwear on there. And then you know, obviously wasn't able to play. So going into, so the big difference between, for me is, you know, I was in a boot all week. I got out there on Thursday. It was Gunther's rule that if you didn't practice on Thursday, you weren't going to play. And let me just give you a side note on this whole story. I was sitting at 120 games started, right? And I didn't want to break the streak. I had a feeling I was going to retire after the year. I think we had about 7 or 8 games left, and I wanted just to finish out. So, you know, I tried everything I possibly could that week, you know, with treatment. Went out to practice on Thursday, had it all taped up, was very, very limited, and it wasn't very good. I mean, I just couldn't do much. Friday did a little bit more, but it was just as bad. So it was a game time decision. And I'll never forget, we were playing out in Oakland in the Coliseum. And Mike Solari, who was my offensive line coach, and Bud Epps and Dave Kendall, our trainers. Okay, so hey, let's go out there and we'll test it out and we'll see how it goes. And man, I tried everything I possibly could to get there out on the field and play, and it just wasn't working. So they made the decision, hey, listen, we just can't put you out there. We don't want to put you in a position where you hurt it worse and you might be out for the season. So I wasn't real happy with the decision, but, you know, and I will tell you, Seren, you know me, I'm kind of a softie, a little tear in my eye as I walked off the field, breaking my 120 game streak. But I did everything I possibly could that week to try to get back from a high ankle sprain. And as a coach, whether it was at KU, whether it's Cologne Centurions, or whether it was MEAs or St. Pius, wherever I've coached, anytime a guy has a high ankle sprain, usually you're off for a couple of weeks. It's just the way it is. Now, Joe Valerio has a good point. At the quarterback position, you could probably get away with it, especially if you have the arm strength and you have the just kind of the moxie of a Patrick Mahomes. But he's going to be playing in a lot of pain. And, you know, so he's going to be limited in some of the things that he likes to do. But I do think Patrick's going to play. And you know what? And, you know, Marty Schottenheimer used to say this all the time, and I thought it was more of a psychological game than anything else. But he would tell us, you know, when you're injured, and I remember being in the training room, he'd pop in and he'd say, you know what, Gurney? He said, the best game I ever played when I was in Buffalo, I had 103 fever, and they told me I couldn't play, but I went out there and played. And sometimes when you're hurt, you just kind of forget about everything else. You just kind of go out there and play. And so, yeah, I think you're going to play really good this week. You're going to be fine. You're going to do great. Now, you know, sometimes that was true. I remember having a bad hip and playing against the Minnesota Vikings at home and having one of the best games I ever had. But these injuries are tough. So the Chiefs are going to have to do some things with their protection. And here's what I came up with protection that they're going to have to do. They're going to have to do the old 2-2-2. All right. For everybody out there, 2-2-2 equals, all right,
6.
Yeah, it equals 6, but it equals the left guard and the left tackle double teaming in the end, the right guard and the center double team in the nose, and then the right tackle and the back over there on the defensive end. And then late in the protection, once everything is settled and the pocket is clean, then you leak out the running back for a check down. But you got to keep that pocket solid. You got to keep that pocket deep. You got to keep that pocket wide. You got to have Patrick being able to set up in the pocket and not have pressure. All right? Because guess what? The Bengals aren't going to dial up a lot of pressure, I don't think. They had a lot of success rushing 3 against the Chiefs and dropping the other 8, flooding zones, and the Chiefs struggled with that, and they were able to get home with 3, sometimes 4, but they don't bring more than 4 most of the time against the Chiefs because they've had success. Now, they may change that up with Patrick Mahomes being hurt.
Well, that's what I was going to say. How much would that alter what you would do if you were looking at them? Like, right, they wanted to keep him in the pocket. In some ways, you're like, okay, bring even fewer. I think it's going to be 3 with now without a spy, just 3, and you drop 8 all the time because he's kind of forced to stay in the pocket. Or do you say he's a sitting duck? Let's go ahead and get him.
Yeah, I think there's going to be times when they do that, but I think that's a mistake against Patrick Mahomes. Now you have some one-on-one stuff, and now you're giving the Chiefs an opportunity to make some big plays at home and really swing momentum. You know, all of a sudden you got, you know, Smith-Schuster or Valdez-Scantling or even, you know, Travis Kelce catching some big shots down the field with, you know, some one-on-one stuff. And you're giving, yeah, you may get some pressure on the quarterback, but he may hurt you with that pressure. Remember, you know, blitzes are feast or famine. I don't think that the Bengals feel like they need to do that. I think the Bengals feel like, hey, listen, we've shown that we could beat Orlando Brown. Hubbard has shown, and so has, what's it, Hendrickson? He's yep. shown that they could beat those guys one-on-one. That's why I'm thinking 2-2-2. Let's keep a solid pocket. You got enough receivers out there. That leaves, I'm not very good at math, at least 4 receivers out there in the routes. And, you know, you can do some zone beaters with those 4 receivers. And listen, let Patrick step up in the pocket and throw the ball on time. And if they start bringing pressure, then, you know, you got some time to get some shots down the field. But I was watching, once again, that All-22, and, you know, and especially in the second half, Hubbard and Hendrickson did a really good job of getting Orlando Brown off balance. Well, how did he get off balance? Once again, the one thing that we've talked about over and over and over again with Orlando Brown, and it reared its ugly head last week too, is he's so top-heavy. Stop leaning, man. All right? When you sit down and you're sitting down in a good pass step, position and your hips are down and your knees are bent and your head is back and your hands are up and you're ready to punch, you do well. But what happens is he gets a little bit, well, I hate to say lazy, but he gets a little bit out of his technique and he gets his hips up high. When your hips are up high, you throw that punch, then you have to lean with your back. And once you lean with your back, you're going to get beat around guys are going to slap your hands. You're going to be off balance. So if anybody, if you're a geek like I am or like you are, Saran, you want to see something, go and watch either the highlights of the game, the second half or last game, and you watch every time that Orlando Brown is top-heavy and leans and gets his punch out above in front of his feet, he gets beat. And you can't get beat. That's why you got to have somebody either giving him a hand or, you know what, turning the protection, one of the two, because, by God, the guy just continually gets beat. He's not getting better with that pass set stuff. And here's the frustrating thing about the whole thing, Saran. I'm not an Orlando Brown hater. I'm not. Everybody out there is like, why do you guys hate Orlando? I don't hate Orlando Brown. I hate it when he's lazy with his pass sets. I hate it when he's lazy with his technique and fundamentals. But yeah, at times, sir, when he's not lazy with it, and lazy, I'm using that as a word, not as a I'm not degrading him. I'm using it.
It's not like he's not trying.
Right. Yeah. I'm not saying that he's inherently lazy and he doesn't care. What I'm saying is he gets lazy. That's this kind of a term offensive line coaches use when you're putting all the fundamentals and technique and all the things together in your set. And he's lazy with one or two of those little things every once in a while. When he's not, that son of a buck, I'll tell you what, he locks people out, man. He is so good at times, but it's either feast or famine with him. And he's got to find consistency for the Chiefs to go to the damn Super Bowl this week. He has got to be the guy. The big sombrero this week is on Orlando Brown. The big sombrero. He needs to wear that thing and wear it with pride, because they've got to get to the point where they say, we don't have to help him anymore. You can get more guys out, or we can go over and help Wiley, because Wiley struggled against Hendrickson too. So there is my worry.
The big sombrero is Orlando Brown. Do you agree that they cannot come anywhere near Trent Williams with the money on Orlando Brown? Like, Orlando Brown's got to bring his demands down, or it's, you know, if you can't find better, it's a franchise tag. And then you move on after this year is that game to me, like we've had some people in the media talking about Orlando Brown's playing great down the stretch. He's playing better and the Pro Football Focus grade's getting better. Yeah. And he more than anyone looks like the level of competition is what, you know, made him shine. Like he's not awful. He's not the worst.
No.
He's not the best. And you just can't be held hostage by players that are just, you know, kind of average for their position. That's what he is. He's kind of average for the left tackle position. And you can't be throwing tons of cap into that.
No, you can't. And you know what? You can't pay a guy at a top five money if he's not playing at a top five guy. I don't care what Pro Football Focus says. You know what? Listen, if you're watching the games and you watch the games consistently like most of us do, once again, we're not Orlando Brown haters. Why don't Orlando Brown have success? He struggles, like you said, against top-notch competition. And to stick with the sombrero theme, if he wants that kind of money, adios, amigo.
Right. Right. I mean, it's as simple as that. Yeah. All right. Why do the Chiefs struggle on short yardage? We'll get into that with Tim Grunard. Grunny is with us. He's brought to you by our friends at CBD American Shaman. We'll talk to Timmy about, I don't know, maybe something other than the fullback dive would be an option. We'll do that next here in the program. Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're talking to Tim Grunhard, football insider, life coach, Chiefs Hall of Fame center, joins us each and every week here in the program. And he's brought to you by our friends at CBD American Shaman. Timmy, tell me why, you know, the Chiefs, why Andy Reid can be so creative and then be so seemingly poor at the short yardage stuff. They're better on third and 10 than they are third and one. I mean, how about, here's a thought. How about run the offense that you run on third and 10 on third and one? Maybe that's an idea.
Well, you know that I am biased towards a certain play that really helped us win the state championship over at St. Pius High School. I mean, St. Bishop Miege High School. And that's the play.
It didn't work. The Petro play did not work. It did not work for the Chiefs.
But I think they picked the wrong Petro.
Okay.
All right. For everybody out there, John Holmes is our head coach. We watch the Chiefs run the Bell special, and we've heard for years now, and I'm going to give Soren a lot of credit for this because he's like, why don't they just use Bell to run the quarterback sneak? Yeah. And, we were sitting there one time, we're doing some game planning, and I said, you know what, let's run the tight end in motion. We have a big tight end. We'll run Petro's play. He goes, that's what we're going to call it. We're calling it Petro's play. We'll call it the Petro. And then off of the Petro, we had the Curtis, which was a pass. So okay. There you go. So we had the Petro Curtis. And we ran it in the state championship. We ran both of them in the state championship, and they both work. So thank you, Soren, for your play working. But
that's what we at the program do, win state.
That's right. But that's what we do. They picked the wrong Petro. Why would you take Gray and run that play? I don't get it. I mean, he's not a big, powerful guy. It's just not his thing. And here's the thing that bugs me right now the most about the offensive line, okay? And listen, I'm not here picking on the offensive line today. I know I was kind of hard on Orlando in the last segment. But please, guys, please don't stop your feet on contact. They are doing that so consistently this year, especially in the run game. Prime example is Trey Smith, who I love. He's a big, physical, tough guy. Last year, and they're going to do it again this year, they're going to run the counter. They're going to run the trap. They're going to run the power against the Bengals. The Bengals are susceptible to the gap run game. Once again, watch the game and watch the Chiefs with McKinnon had a lot of success pulling the guard and the tackle or the guard and the tight end or just the guard and running this gap plays. But they did it last week. Prime example, Trey Smith running a trap, and he hits the guy, doesn't run his feet, right? And the linebacker comes right off of it, makes the play in the backfield for a loss because he didn't get any movement. You can't block that linebacker. That play has to go inside the trap. It can't go outside the trap. And if you stop your feet on contact, Trey, then you can't get enough movement to get in there. So that's a dead play. Once again, short yardage and goal line. You run the quarterback sneak. It's not just about laying on guys. You got to keep your feet moving. You got to do the old pitchfork. Get your hands underneath the guy, especially at your center position, because the center is the key when it comes to quarterback sneaks. You watched Kelce last week against who they play? Philly. Who did Philly play?
Yo, Jason Kelce, you're talking about.
Yeah, Jason Kelce.
This week they played the Giants.
Yeah, the Giants. When they ran a couple quarterback sneaks, and I thought it was interesting. Jason Kelce, when he walks up to the line, in his mind he says, "I hate my life." When they run the quarterback sneak, he does not like it. Sucks as a center. It sucks. Okay, because you got all these guys that are just going to try and crush you, But you got to do a little pitchfork where you snap the ball, you take your arms, you throw them underneath, and you never stop your feet for two reasons. Number one, if you stop your feet, you're a dead player. You're just in the way. And number two, if you stop your feet, guys are going to fall on your legs and you're going to get hurt. So you got to keep your feet moving. And that is one of the things that the Chiefs have struggled with, is they just are laying on top of guys on that. And that's a win for the defensive line. Keep your feet moving. Be active with your feet, especially in third down and short situations. You can't just position block. You can't just stop your feet. I don't care what the play is. And then the other thing is, I know that you remember this play, Saran, and I'm not, I hate to go back when I used to play.
Right.
You know, we did things better. Well, we did a play we used to call. It was a fold play with Will Shields. And Will Shields became the Will Shields because of this play. He would be able to fold around with his quick ballerina feet and get around and lead through the hole. So what you have is a center blocking back. You have the front side blocking down. You have the backside guard pulling around as the lead blocker. You have the front side tackle kicking out. You have the tight end kicking out. And you have everything sealing down with a big-ass, tough, physical guy like Will Shields coming around and being the lead blocker. And it worked every time. That's not that hard, Andy. It's not that hard. Run the damn play. You have great guards. You got big, physical, tough guards. Do the old fold play, please. Jeez.
Well, this is what I've talked about with you before. It's like, you know, you always want to coach a guy up. You want to say, well, we should be stronger. We should be able to handle it at the point of attack. And you always want to keep telling yourself, no, we can do it. We can do it. We can do it. And we just got to work harder. As a coach, especially this time of year, you've got to admit to yourself when you can't do something.
Yeah.
And that's where they are. They can't run well in short yardage, and they've got to change how they do it. They don't just move people off the ball. And for all the reasons you just stated, and it's time for Andy Reid to admit it and, yep, and to do something different.
Yeah. And you know what, that doesn't make you doubting your players. You know what, the guys right now at this time of the year don't have a good feel for it. It's as simple as that. And if you don't have a good feel for it, then don't do it. Smarter, not harder. All right. Yeah. So what are teams doing now against the you know, they look like they're running the quarterback sneak, and they're piling five guys over between the guards. Yeah. They run that little motion, and they seal down, they kick out, and the guy falls forward for a yard and a half. It's a first down. There you go. Are you telling me that you can't give McKinnon, or you can't give Hardman if he's healthy, or you can't give Valdez Scantlin or anybody the ball coming around and he can't fall forward between the tackle and the tight end?
Tim, I credited you. I said, listen, reps are the most important thing. Is it that you've had to spend so many reps, Andy, on getting all the new receivers and tweaking the offense without Tyreek Hill, that the short yardage is falling through the cracks? And yeah, he just made a little joke about, oh, well, I wish that one would have fallen through the cracks. And, you know, but, you know, and well, and there you go. I was like, what? Like, we got a word salad. I you know, it's one theory, the Tim Grunhardt theory, not enough reps on the short yardage.
Reps are like money, Saran.
That's right. Words I live by, Tim. Words I live by. So if you didn't have the reps to invest in it, then just run the things you did have the reps for and you know, stay in the base offense. You're really good at that. It amazes me. How many struggles they've had with it. Timmy, you're the man. We appreciate it. Let's talk next week about the Super Bowl.
Oh, God, I hope so, brother. I really do. I'll tell you, I don't know if you were my Twitter stream. I have to put my phone away this week because I was so nervous. It was either eat or tweet.
So you wisely chose to eat. I'm impressed. Timmy, all you're right, the best, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Mike McCarthy, the second coach to have four postseason losses to the same team. Who's the other? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.